I want to talk a little bit about God, and I want to talk about how we conceive of God. Like, how do we think about God? What is God to us? And it occurred to me kind of a way to get in through the back door on how we understand God is to talk about how we think about prayer. What do we believe about prayer? And I came upon this quote, which I really like. I don't know who said it, but it said, when I was a kid, I used to pray every night for a new bicycle. But then I realized that the Lord doesn't work that way. So I stole one and asked for forgiveness. You know, and I was thinking about in my own life, like, how has prayer changed for me? I remember my mom was very involved with the church, and I was always debating her on prayer. I was really stuck on this notion, you know, of why does prayer work, or how does prayer work? Is it, you know, and so I was always coming to her with these, like, classic kid unanswerable questions, and she's just like, oh, no, here it comes again. But so I want to propose some of those questions. Like, you know, and I think all of us have come upon this quote. We've all hit that at some point, right? Like, dear God, please, I'll be really nice to my sister if you let me have that really nice new bicycle, you know? And then we don't get it. For me, it was praying for my dying goldfish, you know? And, like, the goldfish was, he was a goner. And I'm like, but God, you can do everything. Like, you parted the Red Sea. And, you know, Henry is not that big of a task. So can you just turn him back over and put him back under the water, you know? And then it doesn't happen. And then, like, a day later, you know, we're having the funeral in the backyard.
You need your goldfish, Henry.
And, you know,
awesome.
And my father's saying a few words, you know, and we have, like, the Bible, and we bury the goldfish. And then suddenly there's a disconnect, right? Like, why didn't God listen to me? You know, because I was told that prayer works. Like, and then somebody's sick, and then we're praying for them. And it's like, why are we praying if, you know, if God isn't listening? Or, like, these little questions that come up. And then I also thought about, you know... For those of you that are in business or whatever, you know, being micromanaged by your boss, it's just, you know, it's like, this is my job. I know, you like, you don't have to check and make sure if I'm doing my job. It's like, I got it, right? I can handle it. Like, the massive capacity of our human minds, I can handle this task, you know? And then they're like, how's it going? Fine. What have you got so far? You know, it's like that kind of micromanage. Isn't prayer kind of a little bit like that? Right? Because if I say, dear God, will you watch over my goldfish? Is this like, oh, he's, like, busy and he's not realizing? You know, the massive mental, like, the massive capacity of the heart of God, he's like, overlooking the suffering, you know? I mean, in my own limited mind, I'd be like, would you shut up? I got it, you know? Like, I got you covered. But it's like, so isn't that a little bit like micromanaging, you know? Dear God, please watch over this person. And as if God doesn't have every single one of our best wishes in mind. So it creates some problems. It created some problems for me on what prayer is. What is my notion of God? And then and I see two things generally happen with this, right? I see one is you just give up. And you see it a lot in this culture. Like, you know what, that's just, it's a little bit immature, this whole notion of Christianity or religion. Talk to people that are atheists or that are very not religious or not spiritual. And it has if they tell you why, it always, oftentimes has to do with this idea of kind of a lack of sophistication, a slight immaturity, you know. I lived in Alabama for a while, and there's this subtle conflict between the kind of born-again group of people and the academics. You know, the academics kind of look down on, you know, as being not quite intellectual or sophisticated. And the born-again community kind of looks down at the academics for being, you know, so high and mighty. They miss the heart of the teachings. And you know, and they both have a wisdom to them, but they, you know, that works well together. So the first one is that people just kind of give up because it stops making sense in a immediate way. And then the other thing I notice is that people just kind of go on autopilot, right? they stop deeply engaging the questions, and they just kind of do what people, you know, what they have been brought up to believe. When you travel in the East and, you know, in the Himalayas and stuff, oftentimes the Buddhists are on their own autopilot. You know, like in Buddhism, you have karma and you have all these notions. They can't tell you anything. Like, they don't know how the seeds work or why. They're just like, that's just how it is, you know? And in this culture, you get the that's just how it is. Like, God is just, you know, he's out there doing it. Prayer works. And we don't know exactly why or how. That's just how it is. And I was hitchhiking in South Dakota 4 years ago, and I got picked up by a buckwheat farmer, a guy named Ernie, and we're just talking. You know, we had about 2 hours in the truck together. And at some point, we passed a billboard that had an advertisement for a dinosaur museum, you know. And we hadn't talked about religion or anything. We were just, I don't know what we were talking about. And he looked at it, and there was a moment of silence. He said, yep, I choose not to believe in those. You know, and obviously, like, I realized it was a, you know, creationism kind of viewpoint, and dinosaurs somehow threatened that viewpoint. But it never occurred to me that, like, I could just choose to not believe in dinosaurs. You know what I mean? And my first thought was, like, wow, I didn't know that was an option. Like, they never told me, like, hey, you can, that's just an optional, you know, like. But I was thinking about him, because I had, like, I liked him, you know, and there was, and I oftentimes find myself around born-again Christians, and because there's some beauty there, but there's some, it is a type of sophistication of thought that I feel lacking, and I felt that in Ernie. It was like, somehow, if he had admitted dinosaurs, it would somehow lessen the magnificence of God. Mm-hmm. And I want a faith where I is completely inclusive. The faith I'm looking for is a faith that can include everything. Everything that might seem like a contradiction at first. I just want to embrace and embrace and embrace. If something comes up and I find it to be true. If I can physically dig in the earth and find a bone that's larger than anything I could, you know, immediately put it onto, right? So in Tibetan, they call it a Pung Sumba, right? And it's like the one or the other option. Like, you either just take it for, you know, take it as how the culture describes it, or you just give up on religion. And so what's the third option? And today, as Aaron and Dan and I were talking about this, I decided to go on and read some of the documents of our country, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, and because it occurred to me that one of the, like, you know, every culture has its amazing monument. Okay, you have the Great Wall of China, you have, like, the Taj Mahal. I think our great monument is our documents that we founded this country on. And I think that the thing that makes them so great is that they are a system that allows for change and growth. Because one tendency that would happen is you're open to everything. And I grew up a lot in New Age communities, and I have a certain aversion towards that kind of mindset. Just like, it's all good and let everything in. And there's a lack of groundedness I've found in that kind of worldview. So I want to be rooted in something, but I want to be rooted in something that allows for this kind of change. And you see that in our documents. I think we can all be quite proud of that, is that things can, as you know, they in a sense anticipated, like, for example, privacy rights on the internet. You know? Like, John Adams didn't know that was coming. You know, I mean, you couldn't even imagine that. Like, that is just such, and put yourself back in the time, 1700s, that is impossible to imagine, right? Well, you know, at some point we'll be able to, you know, record conversations over through the air, so we should figure out who owns that. You know? It's impossible. But somehow our Constitution and the Bill of Rights have left space for us to be able to still function and have privacy rights over the internet. It's brilliant. I want a faith that's like that. I want a faith that's rooted, that's grounded, that can hold a whole nation together and still expand as consciousness expands. Still expand as I become more and more aware of what God is. Because I'm absolutely sure of one thing right now, is I don't really know what God is. I don't really have a concept of God. And it's a strange thing because I find myself praying. And, you know, occasionally I find myself praying just in moments of mild grief or moments of deep gratitude. But actually about 20 days after Ernie dropped me off, the buckwheat farmer, I found myself in an immense tornado in Bismarck, North Dakota. And I was in the bathroom praying really hard, you know? And I was like, I'm going to change my life, and like, please, you know? And I could hear RVs being lifted off the ground next to me. You know, it was really terrifying. But the thing I'm absolutely sure of is that I don't know what God is, right? But I still pray. So I still have, like, I personally have a kind of Santa Claus notion of God that works well for me, right? It's like a fatherly, compassionate figure, sometimes even dressed in red, you know? that is just like watching over me, you know? And like, it's just a, but at the same time I can hold it is, I can, the same time I can use it and know that it's not ultimately true. Do you see what I'm saying? That it's, that there is a spaciousness, that I can use something as a tool and know that my mind just doesn't have the capacity for a greater understanding. But the idea of knowing that there's a greater understanding of God means that I am slowly evolving towards that. Just the fact that I'm saying to myself that I know God is not this or not that means that it's something I don't know yet. And that longing to want to know will slowly draw me to God. The interesting thing with Ernie is his very desire to protect God is actually keeping him from God. And you see that all through our own lives. The things we're doing that we think are protecting us are actually keeping us from what we most desire. You know, I really struggle a lot with what Dan and Aaron were teaching because to me, the idea of being a good person sounds exhausting. Okay? It's just like overwhelming. I finally just finished doing 6 years of back taxes. Thanks to Bush, because I had the incentive of wanting to get my stimulus package, you know? But this thing was like hanging over my head, and it was just like I was getting more and more overwhelmed as every tax season came around. And then you come along and you'd be like, you need to be a better person because you're planting really bad seeds. If you're not, I'm like, oh, like put it on the to-do list, you know? It just feels overwhelming. It feels like something I'm incapable of. And then all of a sudden, I had an experience where I saved an animal. And real quickly, I'll just say it was a goat that was sinking in the mud. And I was on a canoe trip. And I came upon it and just the mouth was sticking out. And I think it had probably been sinking for maybe a couple days, very slowly. And as I was digging the goat out, not in that moment, but later as I was reflecting, I'm like, that took absolutely no willpower. Do you see what I'm saying? That was not something that felt overwhelming to me. That was not something I put on the to-do list. You know? That way, when I was in that moment, there was this voice inside of me that said, like, live here. This is where you're meant to live. And I felt absolutely energized by that. So the whole idea of planting good seeds, and I say this just in case you're like me and you feel overwhelmed by that, it's not so much that you should be a better person. It's that Jesus is inviting us to come to the place where we feel most at home anyway. You know, God is put a dinosaur museum near Ernie's house. You see what I'm saying? To try to break him open. Because the thing that he's doing to try to protect him is actually keeping him from him. keeping that from him. I was driving across Texas and I saw a UFO. Okay?
That's the best intro to the story I've ever heard.
Okay, now here's what happened in my mind, okay? At first I'm like, oh my God! You know, like, whoa! Like, and then so I'm looking up and I'm trying to drive and I'm looking up and I'm trying to drive. It's midday. It's probably 12 o'clock noon. I'm moving from Alabama to Arizona. Everything's in my car. You know, I'm driving and there's a UFO in the sky. First I'm like, that is the weirdest plane I've ever seen, right? And then I'm looking at it more and more, and slowly I'm weeding out the fact that it could be a plane. So I'm like, okay, helicopter. That is the weirdest helicopter I've ever seen. Those of you that have driven across Texas, it's a very long stretch, right? Yeah. And it's like 20 minutes later now, and it's still there. And I'm like, okay, it's not a plane, it's not a helicopter, right? I'm starting to get mad. Like, that's a fascinating reaction to seeing a UFO. I'm starting to get pissed off. And I'm noticing people around me also looking up, you know, and I start noticing a few cars pulled over and looking up. And, like, UFOs, like, at least in the movies I see, when people see UFOs, it, like, comes, boom, and then it's gone, you know? And so you can just be, like, bewildered for a moment and then go back to your life. This thing's starting to irritate me because it won't leave. I'm like, go away already, you know? And why is it that it was making me mad? Yeah.
Because you had to make a choice, and you were irritated that you had to make a choice.
What was the choice I had to make?
Whether you believed in it or not.
Yeah, in a sense, but this was even... Yeah, you're right. I mean, but it was more... it was more a feeling of I couldn't place it. Okay? There's this concept called dilation. All right? It's used in the performing arts a bit. And let me just use it as an example. All right, I want everyone to count to three, okay?
One, two, three!
All right, in that second, in that second, nobody was staring out the window for a moment. You see what I mean? If you could see all your faces, it was like... Because, you know, in our culture, it's common to count down to three when something's about to happen, right? I have a glass of water. That's suspicious, you know? So everybody's mind is, in that moment, for a second, dilated. It's open up to some possibility. What's going to happen? Okay? And now that you know I wasn't going to throw water, everyone's like, oh, okay, now I understand. He was using that as a teaching tool, right? It's like the percept and the concept. You wake up, here's another way to say it. You wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and you see something in the corner of the room. And you're like, whoa, what is that? You know, and your eyes are kind of fuzzy and stuff. It's like this white thing and is it a raccoon? Or like, you know, especially if you're camping, which we do a lot actually. And it's like, whoa, what is that? I'm trying to make it out. And your mind is in that dilated state. It's in that open state. And then you turn on the light and it's like, oh, it's just my t-shirt. Okay, so you have a percept, just a raw sensory data, and then I label it t-shirt. Then my mind can rest a little bit, right? So what was happening with the UFO is I was having a percept that I couldn't put a concept onto it. And the mind, in a state of extended dilation, gets frustrated. A mind in a state of extended dilation becomes uncomfortable. If I did, as a performance art, right, if I did something and I got up here and I just went like this and I didn't speak for the next hour, and I just froze like that, right, I guarantee you some of your minds would just start to get mad. Uh-huh. Just be like, this is so stupid. Like, there's a lot of traffic in Detroit and I drove here for this. And you'd leave upset. Because there's like, you weren't able to put a concept onto the percept. And it's frustrating. And as we approach God, we're dealing with that same thing all the time. We are constantly dealing with not being able to label something. How does this look in other cultures? How does this look in the Hindu Bible when Arjuna, right, says to God, God, please show yourself to me. Like, I'm ready now. let's do this thing. Like, let me see your true form, okay? This is what happens. It's a beautiful line in the Bhagavad Gita. So God shows himself, right, to his disciple. And what he shows him is infinity. Now here's what happens to Arjuna's mind. Here's what happens to our mind when God reveals himself, okay? Then, bewildered and astonished, his hair standing on end, Arjuna began to pray with folded hands to the Lord. Lord, I can no longer maintain my equilibrium. I am afraid. O Lord, O refuge of the worlds, please be gracious to me. I cannot keep my balance, seeing thus your blazing faces. In all directions I am bewildered. Right? He's just like, he says, okay, enough. Like, could you go back to the other form? Like, could you go back to the Santa form that I'm more comfortable with? Why is it that every time we, in the Bible, every time somebody sees an angel, what's the first reaction? They're fearful, right? It's so weird. Like, you think you'd be like, whoa, I feel bliss and love, and, you know, like, here's this angel. They're like, ah! You know, it's like the screaming fear, because what's the first thing every angel says? Don't be scared. It's such a weird thing. Why are we so scared of the divine? And it's just like, it's because God is not labelable. There's no way to label God. It's very interesting in the Muslim tradition. You're not allowed to paint an image of God. Because there's a beauty to that. Because, you know, the more we see images of Jesus or of God, you know, Google God and you get white-haired men that look like Zeus, you know? And that somehow is automatically limited us. We're stuck in that same kind of Ernie dilemma, you know? So the question is how to hold on to the possibility of the infinite and just use the finite to get yourself closer and closer to the infinite. And this gets us into, in the Eastern tradition, this notion of emptiness. And I just want to finish with talking a little bit about that. For those of you that have never been to a traditional Tibetan Buddhist teaching, I want to give you a taste of it. We're lucky, right? Because at least I was lucky, because I wasn't raised Tibetan Buddhist. So my notion of spiritual teachings went something like this. You went to church. There was maybe a little bit of fuss about what you're going to wear before church. But then went to church, which lasted maybe 2 hours, and then donuts. And it was like, you know. And it gave me stuff to think about, and then it was just pleasant. And then there was like fun Sunday activities.
You guys got donuts?
Tibetan Buddhism is a little different, okay? So I went to one of the first teachings where I actually got this concept of emptiness went like this. It was a 10-day teaching, and it usually started about noon, and it usually ended about 3 in the morning. Okay, so I'm sitting there, and on first thing that happens for me is day 5. I'm sitting on the floor, right? There's not even like nice chairs, and I'm fading, and I'm trying to write in my journal just to keep myself awake. So I'm just writing about like things that are juicy, you know, like just recounting stories from my life and trying to pretend like I was paying attention. And then I fell asleep and I woke up like jolted in the lap of the woman next to me. You know? My whole body spazzes out. And everyone's looking at me. I'm totally embarrassed. I'm young and I'm like the youngest kid there. And it's just, so I sit back up and I'm just awake out of fear, you know. And then the next day, I know it's going to be the same thing. And the only thing I hear the teacher say, right? For 8 days, human beings are very precious. Very, very precious are human beings. I'm going nuts, right? I'm like, okay, I got point one. Could we go to point two now? So, all right, I got that. Human beings are very precious, right? And then we like break. And everyone's like, God, that was amazing. When he was talking about that, like the third tenant of the fourth stage, I'm like, when did that happen? And I realized the teaching of only if you have ears to hear. Because I was physically only hearing human beings are very aggressive. I'm like, I'm waiting for the, I'm like, I'm going to hear something different. And I couldn't hear it. So anyway, I got really mad. And I packed up my tent and I'm like, I'm out of here. And I ran into a nun who I knew on my way out. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, what do you mean? What are you doing? You got to come with me. This is madness. So she convinces me to go set the tent up again. She's like, just do it for endurance, you know? Just do it to plant seeds for something to happen. So on the ninth day, it's a 10-day teaching, I suddenly hear a teaching, my very first teaching on emptiness. And it's profound. I'm going to give it to you without the 8 days, okay? And all it is he was sitting in front of a wooden table, right? And he says, what is this table? And we said, it's a table. He said, what's it made out of? We said, it's made out of wood. Okay? Is this a table from its own side? Well, obviously, right? Everyone who walks in here would say, you know, if you say, what is that? They would say it's a table in whatever language they were going to use, you know? And even if they didn't know that it was a table, most of them would realize that it was something to put something on, you know? Maybe, right? And then he says, well, what is this to a termite? And I was like, well, it's food, you know? And then he says, well, what is it really? I was like, well, that's a tricky situation. Suddenly it's not so definitely a table, right? Because to an insect, it's actually sustenance. If I tried to eat it, it would just kill me, you know? Or it would pull out my teeth. But to an insect, it was absolutely 100% pure sustenance. So can I now say that this is a table? I suddenly can't. You see the dilemma? And I have to honestly say that it's neither a table nor food, or that it's both. He says, okay, well, the table is just a reflection of everything you're seeing, everything you're experiencing. And this is a concept which they say you need 7,000 hours on. You really do. Our brains are like mahogany, and this notion of emptiness is like a drop of water hitting the top of our heads, you know? Our skulls are like mahogany. And it takes about 7,000 hours of dropping water before you eventually can seep through and some of the liquid gets into our minds. Because we're so convinced that how we see reality is absolutely how it is. We're absolutely convinced that how we see things, we can intellectually play with the ideas, right? But, you know, they were talking about anger, right? We can intellectually play with the ideas like, okay, that person is coming at me because I planted angry seeds in the past. But to react with that wisdom is a completely different thing. To really believe it when the subtle situations come about. You know, it might be one thing with the angry boss, but it's like, how many of you have, pick somebody in your mind that you feel is annoying that other people agree with you on? You see, when you have, like, it's like the whole world is like Survivor. Was it that the name of that show where they have alliances, you know? Like, the work situation is often like that. Like, hey, did you notice what Donna did? You're like, yeah, like, she drives me crazy. Me too. Like, it must be real because you're experiencing the same thing as I'm experiencing, right? So there must be some truth out there. And it gets very tricky to actually use this idea. Do all of you know the story of the frog and the well? Okay, I'll just real briefly. You know, it's a kid's story that's been replayed in all different scenarios. But there's a frog in the well, and this other frog comes back from a visit to the ocean, you know? And he comes back and he says to the frog, he's like, I just saw the ocean, you know? He's like, what is it? He's like, it's huge. He's like, well, is it bigger than this well? He's like, yeah. He's like, no, that's impossible. This well is massive. He's like, it can't be deeper or bigger than this well. And he's like, no, it is. Or no, I'm sorry. I think the story is a bird comes to the well, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the bird says, you know, this well isn't that big. Or, you know, he's like, no, it's huge. And the bird says, no, there's a thing called the ocean, which is intense. It's immense, you know. So the frog doesn't believe it. And eventually the bird carries the frog to the ocean. And when the frog sees the ocean, his head explodes. You know, that's how that story goes. Unless it's a kid's book, and then the frog's like, wow, I didn't know. But, you know, it's the same thing as in, it's the same thing as Arjuna in this Hindu Bible, right? Of seeing God face to face. It's, the infinity is more than we can take. It's just an immense infinity. And this idea of emptiness is a little bit like that. I always think of The Matrix. If you haven't seen that movie, see it. It's a great movie on understanding, on playing with this idea of misperceiving reality. You know, we're talking a lot about these idea of seeds, right? Another word we can use is karma. We don't like to use karma because it's so misunderstood in this culture. But this whole notion of seeds, I want to believe it, and I study it all the time, but when you really look at my actions, it shows that I don't really believe it. You know? Like, you know, most of us are familiar with this notion of karma. Like, when we win the lottery, or say we find money, we don't say, like, or say we get a promotion at work. It's not like, why did this happen to me? Like, all these people, and why me? It's more like, finally, you know? But when something suddenly bad happens to us, like when I was a kid, I broke both my legs really badly, and it was like, why me, you know? Like, why did this just random accident happen to me? But, you know, so we use karma directionally. You know, we use a lot of these concepts directionally. But if this idea of seeds is true, it relates to every single thing in your life. It doesn't relate to good or bad things. It relates to neutral things. You know, I always use this example, like this little spot in the wall. Most of us don't have an emotional reaction to that. It's a spot in the wall, right? But if seeds are true, then that spot in the wall is also coming from your seeds. And I might just leave it there with you for a while to think about that one. If it's true, then everything we're experiencing is coming as seeds, and they're ripening. They say in the scripture, they say in the Eastern scripture, that they ripen 65 a second. Now I think the average movie, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, is about 20 something frames a second. And that certainly gives an illusion of reality, of movement, of clarity. Even with high-definition TV, you can't catch a frame. So imagine 65 frames a second. Now, the tricky thing is, does that mean that the world is an illusion? Okay? Does that mean if I'm projecting everything because of seeds, I'm planting seeds, I'm also planting 65 seeds per second? Right now, every second, you are having 65 thoughts happen. It's, you know, it's the frog in the well thing. It's hard for us to even imagine. But just, and you don't have to buy it. You don't have to believe it. It doesn't matter so much. What's important is just play with the idea. Have a curiosity about it. And if it doesn't work for you, then just disregard it. It's not, the idea is not an important thing. The important thing is it functioning to help you open your heart? Remember that with all of these ideas. Is this idea an idea that will function, that will ultimately help you open your heart? So hold that in your mind. So 65 seeds you're planting a second, right? And that is ripening, is 65 images that are ripening into how you experience everything. And we can debate, and if you're interested in these ideas, we don't have much time to go into it tonight, but come to the Echoes Church, you know? And they're always playing with these ideas. And we were talking before tonight on how we've all had experiences of teaching this stuff, and then suddenly, like, not being able to, like, buy it. Like, I can't buy, like, I don't believe in that, you know? Like, how do you, like, come on, it's too much. So we're playing with these ideas. We're testing them out. We're seeing if they ring true and if they serve to open our heart. I'm going to come back to that, but I want to just finish up with this idea of... Dan started the night off with a prayer of, Jesus, you said if two or more are gathered in your name, you said you would always be there. Now, how do we imagine Jesus is here right now? How do, you know, specifically, how do you imagine that Jesus, let's just pretend you believe in that notion. If for some reason you don't, just pretend you believe in that notion for the purpose of this talk. How is Jesus here right now in this space? Is it that he's here in a spirit realm, like that we just, an invisible form? Or is it that he is actually manifested and he is actually one of us sitting here? Is it possible that he's sitting next to you and you don't even know it? Why is it that Mary can't recognize Jesus after he is risen from crucifixion? It's such a strange thing. I mean, really, one of Jesus' closest disciples, and she can't recognize him. That's always been a strange idea to me. What is it that, why is it that she can't recognize him? When they say, when Jesus promises to be among us, is it just that, like, he's promising to be among us on a kind of ethereal realm? Or does it mean that he is going to be right in front of us and we mistake him for the gardener? Is it possible, right, that Aaron is Jesus? Now, just let's play with this idea, okay? Is it possible? Sorry to put you on the spot. Is it possible that Aaron is Jesus? Okay. Now, let's imagine that there's somebody in this room that absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, thinks that Aaron is Jesus. That this is a manifestation of the divine. That Jesus has manifested as this woman, lives an entire life. Which is nothing, right? It's nothing for God to live an entire life as a manifestation. And let's imagine somebody in here absolutely believes that. And then let's imagine somebody else is pretty sure that that's not true. Okay? And like, she is a great person, but she's not Jesus, you know? Now, who's right? And this is a very subtle thought. Who is right? And does it matter how Aaron sees herself? It gets back to the termite in the table, right? Is it possible that I could not see Aaron as Jesus, and one of you could see her as Jesus, and that we're both right? We have this very linear way of thinking. No, one has to be right. You know, it is either absolutely a table or it's food. You can't say that it's both simultaneously. And and in the Eastern scripture, the idea that Aaron could be both simultaneously is one of the names of God. It's one of the ways. It's one of the footprints of God. It's one of the qualities of God. God is an absence of what you thought was absolutely there. I recently moved to Arizona, and I had got a safety deposit box to put all my valuables in. So I put all my valuables in a little bag, right? I had like this gold watch from my great-great-grandfather who had my same name and some stocks and some bonds and some, you know, everything that was absolutely valuable. I put it in a little bag, and then I had to stop off at the library quickly, and I decided I better not leave it in the car because it's got everything in it, right? So I took it into the library with me, and I did what I needed to do at the library, and then I drove all the way across town, way onto the other end of town to take it to the safety deposit box. And I opened up the back of the car, and it wasn't there, right? I had left it at the library. And the moment I opened up the back of the car and I saw, what did I see in that moment? I saw a lack of something. I saw something that I thought was there that wasn't there. And when we talk about this notion in the Eastern tradition of emptiness, it's very hard to talk about because we're talking about a lack of something. We're talking about a lack of the table being one thing or another from its own side. The table is not, it doesn't have tableness, right? It doesn't have an inherent quality of being a table. It has infinite possibility. Now, so what? Like, what are you talking about? You know, like, bag and it's not there and the lack of, like, what does this have to do with anything? if everything, and this is the key, okay? If everything that I'm experiencing is coming from seeds I'm planting, and the goal is I want to become closer and closer to the divine, I want to answer the invitation to become next to God, you know? I want to answer the invitation to enter the kingdom of heaven. If what Jesus is constantly talking about with seeds, if that's true, then how is it that I enter the kingdom of heaven? Do you see the connection? If it's true that what I'm experiencing is coming from the seeds I planted, and what I want to experience is to enter the kingdom, right? Then what are the seeds that I need to plant to enter the kingdom? And, for years I had this notion that heaven is something that just happens, right? You die and then you go to heaven. But you see all through Scripture this notion of like slipping into heaven moment by moment. Is it possible that with these eyes, with this body, I could start to experience heaven? Is it possible that I could meet God face to face before I died? And what would that mean? Like read some of the lives of the great saints. Like say, I always think of Saint Catherine, right? And she would just, even as a young girl, she would move into these trances of being over, like completely affixed with the divine, would be suddenly in front of her. God, the infinite, right? And when we're, again, try to imagine when I say that she suddenly saw God in front of her, what would that look like if that experience was seeing the lack of something she thought was there? You know, what? Suddenly my bag isn't there. There's a lack of. There is a void of something that I thought was there. There is a kind of infinity. A kind of absolute potential. St. Catherine's is walking down the street with her little brother, and her brother all of a sudden looks behind him and sees her just standing there like this, staring up at the sky. She's having a direct communion with God, a direct communion with the infinite. If I were to have that experience, I'm like the frog. My head would explode, you know? I'm so convinced about the well. So what are the seeds that I plant to slowly be open enough to experience the divine? And that to me is the really interesting question. What are the seeds that I can plant that can open my mind to the possibility of the infinite? And one of the great things that I found in the Eastern tradition is you're constantly working with this idea of this notion of emptiness. Emptiness is not like just black or nothing exists or it's all just void. It's just that how you think things are actually happening are not how they are actually happening. It doesn't mean that they're not real, okay? It doesn't mean that this is not, just because this is coming from karmic seeds doesn't mean that it's not real. Doesn't mean that it didn't have a cause. Somebody probably hit it with a chair and caused that, okay? Why did I break both of my legs when I was young? You know? Why did I get a promotion? It's either chance, right? Or it's that God didn't give us free will and is actually divvying out rewards and punishments based on how he thinks, you know, like a Santa Claus figure. Or it's the cause and effect. Or it's we do have free will and we're planting seeds. And that's ripening into how we experience things. That's a lot in a short amount of time. And we only have so much time with you, and it's an ambitious amount of stuff to cover. So I would just say, whatever hit you in while we were talking up here, whatever, you know, struck you as somewhat interesting, then just play with that notion. If you'd like to talk more about these ideas or debate them, or if there's things, questions or something, please get some information. There's some back stuff on the table about the Echoes Church, and it's a beautiful little community of people deeply rooted in Christ that are trying to explore their relationship with God. And with some of these notions, taking the idea of seed planting very real, as being very real.